Good morning. Can you guys hear me well? All right. I want to thank you, everyone, for attending this talk. Don't you think migrations are really hard? It takes a lot of planning, preparation, and calculated execution. And even with all this, many things can go wrong. Hi, I'm Ram Purnalingam. I'm a program manager in the Exchange migration team.
And I'm William Rall. I'm a software developer on the Exchange migration team.
And together, we are here to talk to you about a simple set of tools and guidances we have to help you migrate your on-premise mailboxes to the cloud. Before I further go into this talk, I also want to bring to your notice a 10:45 session in this very same room on establishing hybrid deployments. This talk is going to be focused on migrations. Once you establish a deployment, how do you migrate your mailbox? So if you have questions around the deployment of hybrid environments, I would strongly encourage everyone to attend the 10:45 session. Also, before I begin, a quick show of hands, how many of you here have used the Exchange Migration Solutions, or IMAP? Oh, wow, that's a pretty large number. So for those of you who have used the tools, you will learn a bit from the, hopefully you will have some insights from the performance and troubleshooting sections of this talk. Okay, so let's get started. Here's what we're going to briefly cover in this talk. We're going to understand an overview of our migration space, what migration solutions do we have, and when to use what. We're going to do a deep dive into one specific migration solution, the hybrid moves. We'll look at, from an administrator's point of view, what it takes to go through the life cycle of a migration, and then delve deep into how all these things work. We'll also troubleshoot, look at some of the common problems you will encounter while migrating to the cloud and see how to troubleshoot them. And then finally, we'll look at performance tuning and what's going to come next. The key takeaway I want you all to have is that we have a simple set of tools to migrate you from on-premise to the cloud, and we encourage you to use it. All right. So, the first step in any migration is to create a plan, a deployment plan. And a deployment plan has four phases: plan, prepare, migrate, and decommission. Once you have a plan, you will know which migration solution to employ. There are a number of factors influencing a plan. So first, let's look at what migration solution options we have. Well, I broadly categorize it into two types: migrating from third-party servers, email servers. And for this, we have an IMAP migration solution. And it's a generic solution, which is lower fidelity in the sense that we only move mail. We do not move calendar, contacts, et cetera. And then for Exchange, we have three solutions: cutover Exchange migration, stage Exchange migration, and hybrid. Now, you may ask, when do I use what? Well, we have a, let me take a couple of factors and try to rationalize this space. Okay. So the first factor I'll look at is a size of an organization. Size of organizations vary from a few hundred users to a few thousand users in one end of the spectrum to another other end. As the size of the organization increases, the time for migration, both the migrating the data and the planning phase, also increases. As the time to migrate increases, the need for coexistence increases, meaning during migration, some mailboxes are going to be on-premise and some mailboxes are going to be in the cloud. And so in this split environment, you need features to work across this coexistence environment. And so if you look at the left end of the spectrum, you can imagine a small organization with maybe a few hundred users migrating over a weekend to the cloud. In this kind of solution, you don't need any rich environments for rich hybrid environments. So we have a solution called the cutover exchange migration, which is meant for small size businesses. It does the provisioning, it does migration of high fidelity migration into the cloud, and automatically does all the job for you. There is a limit. We support up to 2,000 mailboxes in the cutover. Then for the medium-sized orgs, we have anywhere between a few several hundred users to a few thousand users who might migrate over a period of a few weeks. For these type of customers, we have the stage migration. You have the only coexistence features or hybrid features that you get are Mailflow and GalSync. And if you use stage migration, you'll be able to migrate them in phases to the cloud. And then you have the hybrid migration. This is meant for the larger size orgs that want to migrate over several months over to the cloud or want to stay in a permanent hybrid state. And the complexity as you go from the left side to the right side increases. Complexity in deployment and complexity in all these configurations. The migration solution per se, once the environment is set up, is very similar. And you will notice this as I'm going to walk through the various migration solutions. We have unified all the deployment tools. Okay, now you have all these options. How do you pick one? Well, to make this a little easy, we have a deployment assistant tool that Will is going to demo, which will walk you through a wizard-like experience, ask you a bunch of questions, and recommend which solution to employ. Will?
Thank you, Ram. So I'll load it up over here. All right. So my fiance recently accepted a job offer for a small nonprofit arts organization. She asked me, "Will, does this organization use Exchange? How can I find out?" So I told her how she could find out by going to OWA and taking a look. And then she asked me, "Will I still be able to use my conversation view?" So they're running Exchange 2007 on premises. So the answer to that is kind of depending on what version of Outlook you use. And it got me thinking. An organization like this is really perfect to move to the cloud because they then don't have to worry about things like the upgrade cycle and can focus more of their small IT budget on things that are more relevant to their organization instead of general IT problems like Exchange. So I'm going to run through this deployment assistant as if I'm such an organization. So if you search for Microsoft Exchange Server Deployment Assistant, then this will be the first result. So you can click Launch a Deployment Assistant. So for this, I'm going to have them select a cloud-only migration. This tool is also able to give you some instructions for how to upgrade on-premises or to configure a hybrid solution, but I'll choose cloud only. So next question is, do you have any mailboxes to migrate? And the answer is almost always yes. And what is their current on-premises email system, Exchange 2007? And how will you manage user accounts? So this question relates to the level of complexity that you want your user management story to be and whether you want to install dir sync and things like that. So for smaller organizations, usually it's easier to just take the simpler route and manage users only in the cloud. And then, does your on-premises Exchange organization have fewer than 2,000 mailboxes? And yes, they do. So then it will recommend that they perform a cutover migration and take you to this very helpful TechNet page, which shows you all the details about what a cutover migration is and how to prepare and execute your migration. All right. back to you, Ram.
All right. So up until now, we have seen an overview of the migration space, the choices and solution, and how to pick one. Now let's spend time looking at a specific migration solution, which is the hybrid moves. And we'll focus on the new feature we added in Exchange 2013 and Exchange Online called the batch moves. A quick show of hands, how many of you here have done batch moves? All right, cool. So the batch moves is a higher level of abstraction that we added in 2013 to be able to manage a set of moves. It provides you features like async injection, so you can provide a CSV and we'll take care of injecting the various requests. It provides you protocol agnostic capabilities, which I will talk about later in the slides. It provides you some sort of source-server throttling and email reporting and many management constructs. So it's a higher level orchestration capabilities. Now let's walk through the life cycle of a migration wearing an administrator's hat and seeing what he has to do or he or she has to do in the various steps of the migration. So I broadly categorize it into four steps. Step one is the admin creates a migration endpoint. Well, I'll talk a bit more about what a migration endpoint is, but it essentially is a configuration object that contains some information. And then step two, he creates a batch of users that need to be migrated. Step and starts the batch. And then he goes away. And then he gets an email report, and he reviews the report, and he says, oh, this migration looks okay. And then step four, he completes the batch. So that's the typical life cycle of any migrations. So let's look at step one. Step one, he creates a migration endpoint. A migration endpoint is a construct that captures the source server information, some of the credential information, and some connection information. So it's the red circle information that the migration endpoint captures. Migration endpoints are strongly typed. We have three types of migration endpoints today. For hybrid moves, you would use the Exchange remote migration. We have Outlook Anywhere, which is used for cutover and stage, and we have the IMAP for the IMAP migrations. Once you create an endpoint, so how do you create an endpoint? Well, you have two options. You can go into the management UI and go create an endpoint, which will demo, or you can do it in the commandlet. So here is where we have a new set of commandlets called the new migration endpoint. This is a way in which you can go create the endpoint. In this example, I have created an Exchange remote move endpoint. I provide a name. And then I also use the auto-discover protocol to go discover where the MRS proxy is on the on-premise server. So I don't need to go specify the server name explicitly. So you can create an endpoint. So once the administrator has created an endpoint, the next step is to kickstart the batch. So you have two options in the UI. One is you can either pick from a picker in the UI, or you can actually provide a CSV. And the CSV looks something like that in the top right. You provide the email addresses of the mailbox and some configuration. In this case, I specified something called the bad item and large item limits. And these are all optional. Or you can even do it in commandlet. In this commandlet, we have a new command called the new migration batch, where you can specify the batch name, the source endpoint. And the source endpoint here is the endpoint we just created in the previous slide. And the source endpoint can be reused across multiple migration batches. So you create the credentials and save it in this endpoint, create some configurations on the source environment and save it in this endpoint, and keep reusing it in every batch. You don't need to enter this configuration in every batch. And you specify the target delivery domain and the CSV file. Once you specify these details, you can start the batch. So at this point, a batch goes through a certain life cycle. And the life cycle is as such. Every batch goes through an initial sync phase. An initial sync phase is where we are copying the data from the on-premise environment to the cloud. This is where the bulk of the data transfer happens. Once initial sync completes, you will get an email report, and then automatically the batch goes into the incremental sync phase. In this phase, every 24 hours, we copy delta content over to the cloud. So what do I mean by that? Well, we copy new messages that are arriving. We copy any operations that are performed, like deletes, et cetera, edits, et cetera. Once the tenant admin at this point reviews the batch, at this point, you can review a batch and then complete it. And the completion of the batch results in the users getting switched over to the cloud. So this is the completion phase. So let's say you kicked out the batch, and you've gone home, and you're eating dinner, and you don't want to sit behind the, in front of the computer hoping the progress is going on smoothly. So at the end of initial sync, you get the email reports looking something like this. This says who started the batch, when was it started, how long did it take, how many mailboxes were synced. There is also a link on this page that shows that if you go click, you will download a report and a CSV file, which looks something like this. The CSV file has the user or the mailbox that got migrated, what state it is in, how many items were synced, and how many items were skipped. You can also get the similar details from the dashboard. If you double-click on the batch in the dashboard, you will be able to download the report and view it. And we'll show a demo of all these things in a few slides. Once you've reviewed the report, and the administrator finds that it's fine, as I said, he can complete the batch. There are actually two completion models. There is the automatic completion and the manual completion. Let me talk to you about what each one is. In automatic completion, a batch goes through an initial sync phase and then goes through a very small incremental sync and quickly completes. There is no tenant admin intervention. So when you create the batch, it will automatically complete and switch over. In the manual completion phase, batch goes through the very similar initial sync, but then goes into an incremental sync every 24 hours. And at this point, the tenant admin can inspect the batches and do whatever he wants, and then manually go complete, press the complete migration batch command. When to use what? So manual completion is always recommended for onboarding so that you have control over when you switch over and at what point you switch over. So you can configure and review all the reports, et cetera. Manual automatic completion is recommended for local moves like load balancing and database drain, et cetera. So these are the new sets of commandlets that we support for migration since 2013. And these are protocol agnostic, meaning independent of what migration you do, whether it is Exchange Remote, IMAP, or hybrid moves, it's the same set of commandlets. The migration batch is for creating the batch. The migration user is for inspecting the users in the batch. The migration endpoint is for creating the endpoint associated with that protocol. So migration endpoint is protocol specific. So the types that you specify in the migration endpoint gets associated with a certain protocol. Okay. So now we have seen we've seen a life cycle of the migration. Let's go do a demo. Will?
All right, thank you, Ram. Okay. There we go. All right, so as you can see here, this is the Exchange Administrative Center, and here is the migration tab in the Exchange Admin Center. And so I'm going to show you how you can create and manage some batches. So first I'm going to show you how to create. So you go to New and then Migrate to Exchange Online. So in this environment, I've already set up a hybrid deployment. So I've run through the hybrid deployment configuration wizard and created an endpoint. And as you could see on the previous screen, I had already run a few batches. So first, I will select a remote move migration. And then I will use the handy-dandy recipient picker to select the specific users that I want to migrate. So thanks to DirSync, it will have already synced all of the on-premises users to the cloud as mail users. So I can just simply select the few users that I want, hit Add, and OK, and move on. And at this point, because I've already created an endpoint, it'll ask me to confirm that that's the endpoint that I want to use. So I'll hit next. And at this point, it actually verifies that there's still connectivity to that endpoint. So it'll go and test that the server is accessible and it has a good SSL certificate and that it responds to MRS proxy sort of requests. So now I can give it a name and I'll move both mailboxes. And at this point, you also have options for entering a bad item limit or a large item limit, but I'll just use the default of 0. And then here, at the bottom, you can see the completion options that Ram had mentioned. You can either manually complete the batch, which is the default for onboarding, or automatically complete the batch. And then you can also decide whether you want to automatically start the batch, which is what most users tend to do. Or you can manually start the batch later if you're just creating a bunch of batches that you'll then go through and manage later. And then you also have the option to add some more users who will be sent the report. But I'll just use all the default options here and hit new. Okay, and here it's come up in the UI. So instead of waiting for the migration to complete, which can take some time, not usually an excessive amount of time for small mailboxes like these, but longer than the reasonable demo length. So here I'll go to a batch which I created yesterday. You can see that it had a relatively short duration of 6 minutes. And so I got a report for this batch yesterday, and so I'm going to go in and look at what's going on with this batch. So I click the View Details button over here, and then I can see all the users that were part of this batch. And very soon it should show me all the information about the batch, so or about that particular user in the batch. So this one took only 3 minutes to move. It only had 352 items, so it's relatively small. And if I want, I can go through and select a user and say, oh, this user, I didn't actually mean to move them, so I'm going to delete this user from the batch. And it will remove it from the batch. And now my batch only has 2 users. Hit close. Now I will complete the migration batch.
So we'll take questions at the end.
All right. So that's how you interact with batches. And you can see that I have a couple of other batches here, but I won't really drill into them too much because it's mostly the same. And then here is where you can manage endpoints. So I already have an endpoint, but I'm just going to create another one of the same type to walk you through how it works. So here you select the type of endpoint. And for us, we're going to create another Exchange Remote endpoint. And then this is the auto discovery that Ram had mentioned, where you can type in a email address for one of your users on premises. And then you provide some credentials that will be used for performing the migration. So then hit next. And at this point, it'll run auto discovery against the source and find the desired EWS endpoint. Which it will then use as the MRS proxy endpoint for performing the remote move. So it looks like it had an issue here. So the problem here is that my auto discover is not completely configured correctly. So this is actually my Exchange 2007 machine on premises, as opposed to the 2013 machine. So here, because AutoDiscover had an issue, I can just type in the correct endpoint. Hit next, and it will try to validate, and it looks like it worked. So I will type in a name for it. And then you have maximum concurrent migrations. So this is what Ram was mentioning is used for source-side throttling. So I'll just keep it the default value, which I believe is 10, and hit new, and it'll create a second endpoint for me. Oh, it appears it's 20. All right. So now I'll give it back to Ram. Figure out the monitor. Oh. Sorry. All right.
So up until now, you've seen an overview and a drill down into a specific solution, hybrid moves. Now let's look at how it works underneath the covers. So in this example architecture, I'm going to show how migrating from 2010 on-premise to the cloud works. So in this case, an admin inserts a migration batch through the UI. Underneath the covers, we issue a new migration batch commandlet that is received by a service called the migration service. And it's a service running in the cloud. And that service, in turn, processes this request and shreds it out to multiple MRSs. So multiple MRSs receive a bunch of new move requests. Each of these MRSs then, in turn, reach out to the on-premise environment, to the CAS box where the MRS proxy is running over HTTPS protocol. The MRS proxy in the on-premise environment, as we know, reaches out to the various 2010 and 2007 mailbox servers and pumps the data back into the cloud. Once initial sync is done, the migration service completes the batch, which results in a switchover of the users to the cloud, which is the finalization phase. And the clients get redirected. Clients and mail flow gets redirected to the cloud. This is very similar for 2013 as well, except that MRS in 2013 is running on the mailbox server as opposed to CAS server. And so let's walk through the same thing. In the cloud, admin issues a new migration batch request, which in turn results in shredding of the request to the various MRS services. The MRS then reaches out to the on-premise environment. Here, the request gets proxied via the front-end machine to the back-end MRS server. The back-end MRS proxy service running on the back-end processes the request on that mailbox server if that mailbox is in that machine, or any random server if it is a lower version, say 2007 and 2010, and then pumps the data back. And finalization is similar, which is converts the mail-enabled user in mailbox into mail-enabled user. Now let's walk through the various common problems you're going to encounter while troubleshooting.
All right. So there are all kinds of different times when you can encounter a problem during a migration. So from your initial preparation, such as creating the endpoint, to encountering failed moves during that migration, to some content not being migrated. And then we'll also briefly talk about performance and how to tune some of that. So some of the common issues that we've seen during preparation, such as a new migration endpoint creation, are as follows. Bad certificates on the source, people typing their password wrong, or not having the right sort of account on premises to perform a migration, MRS proxy on the source being disabled, or some sort of load balancer firewall, which prevents the MRS from being able to talk to the on-premises MRS proxy. So I'll walk through some of these. So the first thing that you saw in the UI that I did was auto-discover. So this is using the AutoDiscover protocol to try to automatically select for you all the information that you need about your source environment so that you don't need to remember some obscure FQDN of your Exchange MRS proxy on premises. So if there's any issue with that, then you'll see an error like this. And it's kind of small, but it tells you to use testexchangeconnectivity.com to diagnose auto-discovery issues. So if you run in PowerShell using test migration server availability, it'll tell you basically the same thing. The testexchangeconnectivity.com tool is very highly recommended by us as a way of testing to make sure that your auto-discover is configured correctly on premises. So you run the Outlook auto-discover tool under Exchange Server, which is used for testing on-premises deployments. And after entering your credentials and all that, you'll get a response like this, which is kind of small. This one is for a successful test. So you can see that it has done a bunch of different sorts of checks, here it tests that the auto-discover endpoint is available in DNS, and then it checks that the port's accessible, and that you have a valid SSL certificate, and that it was able to have a reasonable response from the auto-discover service. And here you can see such a response. So this is a redirect, and you can also discover if you have some sort of loop here where auto-discover is pointing back at itself or some other issue. And we've heard of all kinds. So if you pass auto-discovery and then have issues connecting to the actual MRS endpoint, you can receive an error like this, which is pretty nonspecific. It tells you where it was trying to connect to, but not very much more detailed than that. So at this point, it's usually best to use the test migration server availability commandlet to test connectivity. So this commandlet is very verbose, but digging into the error message here, you can see some specific details. And here the keywords are the client authentication scheme of Negotiate failed with an unauthorized error. So this was due to bad credentials. And now I'll go through one for a bad certificate. Same sort of long error message, and it'll tell you it can't establish a trust relationship for SSL, and that the remote certificate is invalid. And then for Exchange 2013, the error message for MRS proxy being disabled got a little bit more opaque because of the re-architecture to move a lot of things from the CAS box to the mailbox server. So when MRS proxy is disabled now, the entire endpoint in IIS is no longer existing. So now you will see the 403 forbidden error. So that means typically that MRS proxy is disabled on premises. All right. So at this point, if you've been able to get through all those sorts of common issues, you could have issues where your moves are failing. So some of the common issues that we see with that are, again, permissions issues. So often we find administrators change their passwords and then forget to update it everywhere. So that's one cause for that. Or your administrator could leave the company or something along those lines. Then there can be issues such as the bad item limit or large item limit being exceeded, and I'll talk about that later. And then there can be also issues with the load balancers or firewalls getting in the way of communication between MRS and MRS proxy. So let me do a quick walkthrough of how you investigate such an issue. So as you see, there's the dashboard page, and it'll have a status of completed with errors as opposed to completed. Similarly, if you hadn't completed this batch yet, it would say synced with errors. And that means that It finished the initial sync period, but there were some users which had failed. So you click View Details, and you see a page like this, which lists the status of the different users, and then the specific error. So in this case, the error is due to usually two administrators trying to manage the batch differently at the same time. So in this case, one administrator had run suspend move request or something to stop the move request while the migration service was trying to complete that user. So then you'll get an error like this. And you can download the report, and it'll tell you all the information about that move. And so you can see here that, oh, looks like I suspended it. So whoops. All right. So you can also see errors through PowerShell. If you run the get migration user statistics commandlet, then you can include the report into that. And then using PowerShell scripting, you can do all kinds of magic and look at all the error details that you could possibly want. So another common issue with moves is that the password could expire. And when that happens, you see the familiar 401 unauthorized error again. So I mentioned earlier these bad items and large items. Some of you, I'm sure, know exactly what that means. But in case you don't, here's a handy graphic for large messages. So in this sort of example, you have the target size, where it mentions that the max email message size is 35 megabytes. But on the source, you could have messages of any size. So perhaps on premises, you had configured a max message size of 50 megabytes because your customers like using large attachments or something along those lines. So as you can see, it's enumerated all of the messages on the source. And one of those messages was too big. So we were unable to write it to the target. And so at this point, we will record information about that that message item that you can retrieve later. Similarly, with bad messages, there can be a couple of reasons for this. But as you can see, it'll move a couple of the messages, but then this one will fail to open. So this could be due to some sort of database corruption on the source, or it could be due to validation issues. So for example, in Exchange 2010 and 2013, we've gotten a little bit more strict about some of the calendar items that we're allowed to create, such that you can no longer have calendar items that end before they start. Though I'm sure that sometimes you want a meeting that'll end before it started. Going back to the UI, you can see that when content's not migrated, you get this sort of error over here. And then you can look at the skipped item details for each of the items that are skipped. So that'll bring you to this page, which will tell you the date, the subject of the message, what type of problem it encountered. So either the item was corrupt or it was too large, and the folder name where that message is located, or was located on the source. So at this point, you can take a look and see how much you care. It might be a message from 10 years ago in some folder, which doesn't sound like it was ever human accessible. And in that case, you can just say, well, they're probably not going to notice, so I'll skip it. You can retrieve the same information through PowerShell by running get migration user statistics again. And then you can look at the skipped items. So by scripting, if for whatever reason you want to look at it using a script, then you have that ability. And lastly, I'll briefly touch on load balancer issues. So load balancer issues happen when the MRS proxy in the cloud is not able to continuously talk to the same MRS proxy on premises. So this sort of connection is required to be maintained during the entire move until it's relinquished by the MRS for some reason, such as being ready to complete or whatever. And so if this is broken, then you will see a communication error with a message indicating that there was an invalid sequence number. So this is kind of nonspecific, but it's always or almost universally due to the cloud MRS no longer being able to talk to the same MRS proxy on premises. So usually this is due to a load balancer, and the approach to take is to use the exchange cookie, which is stamped by the MRS proxy, as a way to maintain this affinity instead of using IP affinity. All right, and now Ram will briefly talk about performance.
All right.
Hello.
So let's talk performance. So typical questions I get asked is, why is the move slow? Why is my move queue? Why is it getting throttled? What can I do to improve performance? So we'll try addressing each one. So we'll first look at a general distribution of how migrations look like in data center. So this is the first graph that captures the amount of time a move is queued. So on the y-axis, these are the number of requests, and on the x-axis is the amount of time. The first is 0 to 5 minutes, then 15 minutes, and then about 1 hour. And so let me talk about what do you mean by queued. What happens is when you issue a batch, the batch gets shredded and inserted into a queue as a bunch of move requests, as much of move requests. And then MRS asynchronously comes and processes these requests. So now the time, amount of time this request is sitting in that queue is what is captured here. And if you look, by and large, 95% of the requests get processed within 15 minutes. We have some outliers, and we are working to get those outliers reduced so that we can process them as quick as possible. The next one is, okay, now that you process it soon, how soon will the migration complete? Well, for this, the answer varies, really, and the distribution is quite a bit. See, the x-axis captures the requests, and the y-axis captures the throughput, megabytes per hour. And if you look at the distribution in terms of megabytes per hour, it's one end it's 100 megabytes per hour to another end of few gigs per hour. This is the per mailbox throughput. And it varies a lot, largely. And you would ask, why? And the point is, customers are moving in from various environments across the world to various data centers, and there are so many variants. If you look at the orange line, that shows the stall ratio, the amount of time we spent in stall state, why we were stalled. And if we further investigate, most of the reasons we stalled was because of transient errors, and transient errors due to network, and typically was pointing to high latency. So if you reduce the latency between your environment and the cloud, our throughputs improve. So let's talk about how to improve the throughput a little bit later. So this is how we see our distribution today, and how do you analyze your performance? Say you are migrating to the cloud, how would you investigate how good it is going? So we recently released a blog, I believe a week ago, which has got a script and a blog explaining how to use the script. So I highly recommend you go read the script. I will briefly let's look at some of the details. So the script is the analyze move request stats. You load the script, get the move reports from the various moves that you just injected, and then run them through the script through the process stats command. And then the script outputs something similar to this. It's got a bunch of details. Let's look at some of the key details, and then I highly recommend you read the blog. First is the throughput variation. So it gives you the min, max, and average throughput you effectively got from this set of users, mailboxes. Then the average latency that you experienced across all these moves. So it calculates, it does a ping from the MRS in the cloud to the MRS proxy and measures that ping. And then over a period of time, calculates the average and stores it here. And the average latencies we've seen is around 100 to 125 is okay, but if you can reduce the latency, that's better. And if the latencies are high, we have solutions that will help you improve the throughput. The next one is the source and destination duration. A source duration is the amount of time we spent in the source environment, MRS proxy, and in the network. The destination duration is the amount of time we spend in the target server. And if you see the distribution, here is an 80-20 kind of ratio where we say that most of the time it was spent on the source server and in the network. And so this kind of distribution is normal, and this is what you should expect to see when you run these, the script. And then a bunch of reasons or a bunch of reasons why your mailbox was tall. It could be because we were doing content indexing or because the CPU was really hot on the source or the target, and for various reasons. And so I recommend you go read the blog to find more details around the script. So you do all this. Now you understand some of the pain that you have in throughput. How do you improve it? Well, you have the first option is increasing the concurrency. The best effective way to increase throughput is to increase the number of users you want to migrate simultaneously. We support up to 100 per tenant, so you can set anywhere between 0 and 100. We have seen that most customers are okay with this number. There have been a few exceptions, but that's just very, very, very few. So, and this concurrency is something that is controlled in the migration endpoint. Will briefly showed you a authoring of migration endpoint where he's kept the defaults on the concurrency to 20. That's the same number. If you increase it from 20 to 100, then you will get more number of mailboxes migrated simultaneously. The next way to increase throughput is by decreasing the chattiness between the client and the server, between MRS proxy and the MRS service in the cloud. And in CU3 or SP1 of 2013, we added this capability where you can increase the buffer size from 256K to any amount you want. We recommend you set it to 7 MB. And if you increase it from 256K to 7 MB, then the chunk of data that we send to MRS becomes 7 MB at a time instead of 256K. And this is useful for high latency networks so that you can reduce the chattiness. And typically the gain in performance is realized for large mailboxes, because we will reduce dramatically the initial sync duration. Okay. Another way, of course, is to author your batches such that you spread the load between a bunch of source servers. So you pick a mailbox from a server A, server B, and server C so that one server is not overwhelmed. And of course, you can always add capacity. That's a final way to do it. Okay, so now up until now, we've seen what we have, these Choison solutions, drilled down into a specific solution. We troubleshooted a bunch of common issues and looked at performance and how to improve them. Finally, let's look at what's coming next in the pipeline and how we are going to try simplifying the space further. So we are looking into three areas. First one is scheduling. So we want to provide a simple scheduling mechanism so that you can say something like, start your batch at a certain time and complete your batch at a certain time. It's not a guarantee that it'll start at the time, but it'll start around the time, a ballpark number. Then next is we want to unify and simplify this exchange migration space. We have a bunch of tools, cutover, stage, hybrid. And we feel that these various tools take a dependency on some sort of deployment solutions, like stage requires dirsync, cutover has its own provisioning, hybrid requires MRS moves require hybrid. And so in order to get to the cloud quickly, we want to simplify these options and provide you a Swiss Army knife where you can provision through any mechanism and then migrate through any mechanism. And so that's the kind of thing we are working on. And finally, we want to improve the error reporting in your IMAP solutions so that you will have reports, something like the move reports that you have for moves. Okay. So the key takeaway that I want you to have today is that we have a simple set of tools that you can use to migrate to the cloud. Okay. Thank you very much. I think we're done here, and we are open to questions. Please use the mic here.
Thank you for the helpful presentation. So in my environment, I have a hybrid environment. So I have Exchange 2010 SP3, one CAS server. It's a CAS Hub transport server, which is also my hybrid server. And we have Office 365 E3. So with our current structure, I mean, was it better for us to have had a dedicated CAS Hub, CAS server that will just do the migrations, or are we okay with what we have?
So it really depends on the kind of capacity planning you guys do. Okay. So we have seen customers, by and large, use dedicated hybrid servers to doing migrations. But you can use your existing CAS servers if the load on the CAS can take it. Say you do migrations offline during off-peak hours, and there is not much traffic on your CAS, then you might be okay doing this kind of juggling. So it really depends on how you want to manage it. If your migration traffic is going to be constant throughout the day, and it's going to add, affect the performance of your various clients, then you might want to have dedicated hardware for migrations.
All right. Then my next question is, and maybe this is something that could be added in the wish list for migration, is I wish there was a, or if you know of a tool that we could use to report mailbox dependencies, because right now it's so hard. If I move a set of users, user accounts, and then the shared mailbox that they access have to stay on premise because other users are still accessing it, and these users cannot move yet to the cloud because they are using, lo and behold, legacy programs that won't work in Office 365.
Okay, we'll keep that in mind, yeah.
Yeah, so is there any current tool that I can use to ease this pain point that I could at least report, okay, users A, B, and C, you're using a shared mailbox, so I'll move you in a batch.
So you want to see how we can detect dependencies. You can use some tool to detect dependencies so that you
can
plan
migration.
Right,
which user accounts have elevated permissions to what shared mailbox or what resource mailbox?
Currently, we don't have any such tool, at least not that I'm aware of. I'm looking at the...
There are some ways to do that. I'm running a big migration of 48,000 mailboxes. We are running into the same scenario.
Okay.
To identify that where are the shared permissions and shared mailboxes, you can do it with a simple PowerShell command. But the issue is much bigger than that. Because when you're talking about 28,000 mailboxes, now unless you migrate those mailboxes that have the rights on somebody else's mailbox first, and then migrate the users that has been delegated, the delegation doesn't show up in Office 365.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a challenge, because now in an environment like 28,000 mailboxes, how do we plan that we migrate those accounts first, mailboxes first? So it becomes a real nightmare to handle.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
In the same context, when you talk about all these three options of migration, I would say that you also mentioned about the advantages that you have with the hybrid approach, because right from Outlook, right from, you know, migration to and fro from Exchange Online to on-prem are real important considerations when you talk about the hybrid configuration.
Yep.
In my personal opinion, it's a good idea to have at least one hybrid Exchange server in your environment, even if your migration is complete. That's what I believe, and I don't know whether you agree with me or not.
Okay.
So what is that?
So
I wish he spoke on the
so his point is that that it's he's doing a 28,000 user migration, and dependency analysis is really hard, and it takes a lot of planning to do those analysis, and he needs to even manage, you know, delegate permissions together so that he doesn't break those contracts. His recommendation is to use a hybrid server, as dedicated hybrid server, independently.
Okay, but there's no recommendation to find out the dependencies.
No, there is no tool. So he says use a script, PowerShell script, to figure out those dependencies.
A script?
Yeah, you can talk to him offline, a PowerShell script.
Okay, all right. And then I just have one more thing. You know, when you have the common troubleshooting for the clients, troubleshooting.
Yeah.
Why clients won't move. In my experience, it's sometimes because we did not sync the OU where the user account is.
Okay.
And it took a while to figure out why it failed.
Okay.
Because the OU was not included. And then the other thing was sometimes the UPN will not be in the user property, and we discovered that when we looked at, we have to use ANSI edit. For some reason, it was not there, so we have to put that manually. So just an FYI.
All right, thank you. What is that?
Bird. So hi, I have just two short questions. The first one is, if I create a new migration endpoint, I have to provide username and password. For how long this will be saved?
So the password, we do not expire. It's your company policy, so if your password expires in your company, then
inside the migration endpoint, I must provide username and password. Will this be saved for a long time?
Yes, it is permanently saved as a part of the endpoint in a secure store.
Yeah.
And if your password in your org changes, then you'll have to update the endpoint configuration.
That's fine, that's true, okay. The second question is, at the beginning of your slides, you have shown us how to create a migration batch with a CSV import. And there have been more columns, email addresses, and much more stuff.
Yes.
Does this really work? Because my experience is that you can only use email addresses in the
column,
more columns.
Mm-hmm. It depends on the migration type. The columns, the CSV columns, change depending on the type. And for the one I was showing was the Exchange Remote Moves.
Yeah.
And the various other columns are optional. So if you don't specify it, that's fine. The required one is the email address.
Okay, because I get an error message. Maybe afterwards you can show me your dollar data.
Yeah, okay, talk to him. He'll show you.
There's some documentation about the CSV file formats on.
We can look at your error message.
Okay,
and we can look at the
that's fine for me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
It was a good session.
Thank you.
Just a quick question. Is it recommended to move users who have delegates at the same time as their delegates?
So can you guys use this mic? I can't hear anything from that. Sorry. Apologize.
The question was, is it recommended to move users to have delegates at the same time as their delegates are being moved?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
One of the other things that I'd like to mention.
Hello? Okay, here we go.
Yeah, okay. If you can use that.
I understand. Is there a 2 terabyte limit per week for moves to 365?
Is there a size limit per week? So
for
very large migrations,
yeah,
we have a team that handles the migration, so you should work with them. They will work with the capacity management team to plan the capacity out. So there is a process for very, very large migrations.
Okay, all right.
So if you're terabytes per week, then most likely you fall into that category.
Yeah,
so
yeah, we got kicked back because they said that's just the limit. It's a hard limit of 2 terabytes per week on the MRS service, the Microsoft MRS service.
So it's not more, it's more to do with the capacity than to do with the MRS service. So capacity of the data center and what it is. So there is a process for large, very large size tenants. And so you should follow that process. Do you know who the contact is? We can talk offline.
Okay.
Yeah, mine was on the actual throttling policy. If that
do you guys mind using this mic, please?
My same question was on the throttling policy. Is there an actual document policy somewhere for how many mailboxes can be moved in a certain amount of time? Or?
So we provide configuration or choices. The real way to analyze your performance is to do a test migration and see what kind of throughputs you get. So from your performance, if you look at the performance variability I showed in the graph, it really depends on the environment, because I get some customers get 100 megs per hour, some get few gigs per hour. So the average is around 300-400 megs, and if you can shoot about 400 megs per hour per mailbox, then I think you're in a good ballpark range. So then you can effectively take that and scale that out to multiple mailboxes and be able to migrate.
Yeah, it's like my last migration was about 800 users, about 300-400 in. I was getting transient errors, a lot of them, and it would actually, the counters would go backwards, so like 66%, 68%, 60%.
Hmm. So if you follow the...
Yeah, I had to drop the concurrent connections down to 10 for it to even work.
No, I understand that. So if the errors are transient errors, one way to mitigate is to reduce the chattiness and increase it. Do you know what your latency was?
No.
So if you can run the script and...
I haven't seen that before, so...
And do the analysis, it'll give us some...
And so in the future, is there an option to just do mail or calendar separate like migration was does?
We don't have it in the plans.
That'd be really nice.
We can, if it's a request, then we can take it and put it in our backlog.
Yeah. And I also noticed there used to be a script that you could actually cancel a migration, even once it was up to like 95%. And you can't do that anymore. Was that removed for a reason? Or
you want to take
so
that?
You can still remove a migration batch at any point.
No, he wants to do it while it's happening.
Yeah. Once it gets to a certain end, though, you can't stop it.
So we are working on the next version where you will be able to do that. Okay. So some of the unit simplification work where we are, you'll be able to cancel as it is in progress.
Mm-hmm. My question is regarding straight up remote moves. Are there any plans to allow releasing individual mailboxes instead of completing the entire batch? In the portal, I know you can do it via PowerShell.
So completing individual moves in the batch.
Yeah, individual mailboxes instead of the whole batch. So if I have a batch that
Can you give me a scenario where you would use this?
Okay, you just migrated Del Monte, 1,200 mailboxes in a batch, and we had different sites. So we had people on site to assist with, you know, setting up the mailboxes, so we had to do specific sites at one time. Via the portal, you had to either complete the whole batch or PowerShell, we had to, you know, script out something to release individual mailboxes.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. Is there any future plans to put that in the portal to make it a little easier?
Okay. Currently, we don't have it in the plans.
So one thing that you could do is if you have a batch that's sitting in synced state, then you can remove that user from the batch and then restart it in a new batch. But that does get rid of your progress.
It's easy to release it in PowerShell, but then when I come back and look at the portal, the stats all jacked up if I use PowerShell.
You can do, in the future release that we are going to look at, you can do the following, which is write a script so that you can use the move the users from one batch to another and then complete only that batch. That you can do.
Okay.
But that requires you to, it's still not as easy as what you're asking for.
So I might as well just use the PowerShell that I'm doing currently. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is about the dynamic distribution groups, and as we know that we can't migrate them and sync them with the dot sync. So one of the things that we have tried to do is that we try to create the corresponding context in Office 365 so that our mail flow works. But one of the things that I like to share here is most of the time when we create these dynamic distribution groups, the object that you choose on-prem for the dynamic distribution group is only the mailbox. And after the mailbox is migrated, that mailbox is no longer a mailbox, it's a mail-enabled user. So that loses the membership there. So the whole mail flow for your dynamic distribution group breaks unless you take the preventive action upfront and choose your dynamic distribution groups to include not only the mailboxes, but also the mail-enabled users. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, the distribution dynamic distributions would become a real nightmare. Besides the delegation issue, which is, I don't know how we can handle that with this big environment, I still need to seek your advice and guidance. How can we handle this large organization with so many mailboxes that has delegation there?
Mm.
Because that's just impossible. Either we break it, or we go with this nightmare to pick up, okay, we might get this first, and if we get this second, that's just impossible.
Okay, maybe we should talk offline about this.
Can you talk a little bit more about the throttling that Microsoft imposes on remote move requests?
On throttling?
Can you talk
like
more about what?
Resource throttling.
Oh, so the stalls that we have during performance?
Microsoft typically has.
So we are in a multi-tenant environment.
Yeah.
And there are a bunch of workloads that run on a single server. And we have a search, HA, high availability service, MRS, all these interactive workloads, all running on a bunch of servers. And so when and so each one of these workloads get some level of some amount of resource, CPU kind of resource. And they get throttled when they exceed that the capacity that they are allocated. So that is one reason why you might get throttled, is when you land there, there may be high, the server may be hot and you'll get throttled. But then over a period of time, our servers will load balance this work all over, around, and then the capacity will get even, and then you will get processed. Then there are other reasons why you might get throttled, because, say, content indexing is falling behind while you're migrating to the cloud, in which case we want to keep content indexing up to date so that when the user logs on first, he has the best experience. And so we slow down moves so that content indexing can catch up. The same way we want to keep copies, replica of this this mailbox up to date, and to ensure that there is no data loss because we don't fall behind from replication, we slow moves migration around. So there are various reasons why we slow it so that this, when we are in steady state, the things are running smooth, and when we switch the user over, things are smooth and fine. So these are various reasons for throttling on the target side. On the source side, of course, it depends on the environment capacity and so on and so forth.
Right. I'm sure everybody who's migrated has experienced excessive queuing in their migrations, and it becomes extremely frustrating when we reach out to the Microsoft product group to try to address these particular issues.
So that's exactly why we released the script. So hopefully you can run the script, and a thing I would ask you guys to do is when you file support issues, cut and paste the output of the script into this so that when the engineering team looks at this, we know what went wrong and what we can do about it. And so you can have some, you will have enough data to say, hey, look, guys, you need to do something about this. And this will help us address and analyze and address these issues.
Thank you.
So my question, just to clarify, we don't, for security reasons, we don't publish our auto-discover record to the internet. So you're telling me that we have to do that before we start the migration? Is that?
If you want to.
So for creating an endpoint, you don't actually need to use auto-discovery. So you can either do like I did, where you go through the UI and it fails to auto-discover. And then you can manually input a setting, your MRS proxy endpoint, or if it's Exchange Outlook Anywhere, then the connection information for that. So you don't need to use auto-discover if you don't want to. Or using the commandlet directly, then you can just run new migration endpoints and then input all the information that's needed.
So is it using Outlook Anywhere to communicate? Or EAS, is it using port 80 stuff, or?
So it depends on the protocol and the migration type. So if you're running a hybrid move, then that uses the MRS proxy protocol, and it talks to the EWS endpoint, this MRS proxy service. If you're using staged or cutover migrations, those both use Outlook Anywhere to reach into the source.
Okay. And what other question had to do with shared mailboxes? Once you move a client mailbox or a user mailbox to Office 365 in the cloud, can they access the shared mailboxes back at the on-premise?
No, I don't think so.
That's a question for hybrid people at the next talk, I think. I don't really know.
I don't think you can, but can you ask this question in the next talk? Those guys will know.
Okay, because we have like 10,000 shared mailboxes.
10,000?
Oh, yes. Boy.
Maybe an issue, huh?
Thank you. Hello. So my company has a number of internal email addresses that we use that we don't necessarily want to publish to the internet, but at the same time, we're going to be in a long-term coexistence hybrid state. Is there plans to allow you to migrate a mailbox with the internal addresses, or to say, I know it won't flow externally, please migrate the mailbox?
I don't know. You should ask the hybrid guys. So the next talk, you should ask them.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. All right, thank you very much, guys.
Yeah, thanks for
coming. Please do fill out the evaluation forms.